Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the RIIO-ED1 conference call held on the 22nd of November 2013. Throughout today's conference, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the conference, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any of the participants have difficulties hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I would now like to hand the conference over to your host, Andrew Wright. Please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome to this Ofgem conference call on our fast-track decision for the RIIO-ED1 price control. I'm Andrew Wright. I'm Interim Chief Executive at Ofgem, and I'm here with Hannah Nixon, the Senior Partner responsible for the distribution networks, and members of a team that have been working on this price control. Before I hand over to Hannah to take you through the decision, I just want to make a few points. First, I wanted to say that the RIIO process in general and the fast-tracking process in particular is proving a huge success. Every company in ED1, we have seen a sea change in the quality of the business plan submitted, their engagement with consumers and with other stakeholders, and the degree of innovation demonstrated. And this will bring real benefits to consumers at times when value for money is crucially important. And secondly, I want to emphasize that this is a decision on fast-tracking and not a final determination. The fact that we've decided that the plan submitted by five out of the six companies need further scrutiny and challenge means just that. It does not represent an outright rejection of these plans, many of which, as I said, have some very strong features. Finally, and I just thought it important in the current climate to emphasize that Ofgem remains committed to ensuring a stable, independent regulatory framework for networks. This approach has served both consumers and investors well and has delivered investment worth many billions, its improved standards, and its lower prices. And you, the investment community, are one of the key stakeholders in this, and we welcome your feedback during this consultation period. And with that, I'll hand over to Hannah Nixon, who will take you through the key points of today's announcement before we take questions.
Thank you, Andrew, and good morning, everybody. I hope that you've had an opportunity to see our presentation that's been loaded up on our website. I'm going to go straight into slide 8 of that presentation. So the headline message from us is that today we're proposing to fast-track the four licensees of Western Power Distribution. That fast-track decision is subject to consultation, and in particular it's subject to a consultation on the methodology for setting the equity market returns, and I'll come back to that in a moment. The other five DNO groups are actually sending their plans back to them today because we think that although they've all risen to the challenge of putting in well-justified business plans, we do think that they can do better, and so we are sending them back so that they can set out what further improvements they can make and provide further justification. So those five companies will go back onto the sort of standard flowchart process. So what I want to do in the next few minutes is just to provide a bit of colour to that decision and take you through our process for arriving at where we are today. So the first thing to say is that all companies have responded well. We have seen a fundamental change in the way that all the DNOs approach price controls. The quality of the business plans is much higher than we've seen in any price control before. Stakeholder engagement has clearly been at the heart of the DNO's plans, so we can really see evidence of how stakeholders are influencing what companies are planning to do. We've seen some real innovation in approach, for example, on social obligations and smart grids, and companies have already identified more than £2 billion of savings that they can take out of their cost base. So if we flick onto slide 9, as we set out in our strategy document, we assess the business plans against five criteria. These are exactly the same criteria that we used for the transmission and gas distribution process a year or so ago. So the five key criteria are the process that the company has used to put its business plan together, the output that it intends to deliver, the efficiency of its expenditure projections, the efficiency of its financing package, and how it intends to deal with and mitigate risk and uncertainty over the 8 years of the price control process. And we do look at that in a historical context of historical performance. We've been clear that the RIIO process does not preclude fast track for a company that has poor performance, But clearly a company that is performing poorly in some areas today does have a higher hurdle to pass in terms of convincing us that it can change its behaviour and its performance going forward. So slide 10 gives you the summary of our business plan assessment. We code all the companies green, amber or red against the criteria. Green means that we're broadly happy with the company on that aspect. Amber means there is still some further scrutiny that is required or justification that is required from the company. And red means that we do have some wider concerns and there will be a lot more work and scrutiny that needs to be done over the remainder of the process. So you can see from the chart on slide 10 that Western Power Distribution is the only company that scores green across the piece. WPD has provided and set itself some really challenging targets, particularly in terms of reliability. It also has a comprehensive strategy across social outputs and smart grids. And it's the one plan that we felt the package was obviously providing value to consumers, and hence we're proposing today that it is fast-tracked. If we go through the other companies, ENW and Northern Power Grid, you can see from the chart they both put in very strong plans in a number of areas, and we've highlighted the key aspects where they stand out in our letter. I suppose the issue for us on those two companies is that as we see the plans today, we're not convinced that the costs that they're putting forward are efficient. And so that's the area that we'll be particularly looking at for those companies going forward. For the other distribution companies, cost efficiency, as you can see, is a concern as well, and to varying degrees. We've also got concerns about some of the output categories for UKPN, SSE, and Scottish Power. For UKPN, actually, they have put together some ambitious output objectives, particularly given where they are today. But we did feel that we had some concerns about their strategy on asset health, asset loading and resilience. SSE, again, got concerns about some of their asset health and criticality data, also concerns about their social outputs, and a concern that SSE has also significantly de-risked its plan versus our strategy document and versus the approach taken by other companies. And that does have a potential impact on consumers. But in other areas, again, they're scoring well in terms of the presentation, stakeholder engagement, and so forth. Similar story on Scottish Power. Again, a generally acceptable presentation, probably the best in terms of the justification of the financial parameters, but concerns on asset health, social commitments, some of the data that was provided to us, and some of the other output categories. So again, there's some areas of concern that we will need to be focusing on as this process goes forward. We flick over onto slide 11. This just shows a summary of our cost analysis. So in assessing the efficiencies of the company's business plans, we've taken a toolkit approach. That means we've used a range of approaches and no single one of them is determinative. We've looked at top-down assessments of total expenditure, disaggregated assessments of total expenditure, forward-looking data, historic data, quantitative and qualitative analysis. And all of that has gone to inform effectively those blue triangles you see on the chart on slide 11. We then compare those to an upper quartile, which is the dotted line at 100%. And that's how we assess the efficiencies of the company. We've then stress-tested that analysis to reflect possible downsides on the cost of equity that we flagged in our financeability study almost a year ago. And then we've also adjusted the upper quartile to reflect where companies have put forward additional outputs that they will be held to delivering and that offer real value to consumers. So the final line that we actually compare the triangle to is that red solid line. And you can see from that only WPD remains robust to that sensitivity testing. You have ENW and SSE not too far behind, but the only one that actually passes that high hurdle is WPD. So slide 12 and 13 then look at some of the financial metrics. Slide 12 sets out our strategy decision of ED1 versus the price control that's currently in place for the distribution network companies. Slide 13 then sets out the parameters that each DNO included in their business plan, and you can see there's a lot of commonality between the DNO's numbers in this area. And we've also been clear that although there's a lot of commonality, no company really provided did a really good job in terms of providing a justification for where this had ended up. And although we pointed out some issues we wanted them to take into account in our financial stability document a year ago, there was limited coverage of that. So that's where we are. If I turn to slide 15 and the consultation on the equity market returns methodology, why are we consulting? Well, just over a week ago, the Competition Commission provided its provisional determination on Northern Ireland Electric, and that includes a different position on the equity market return and the methodology that we've used. Given we were only days away from making our decision, we didn't want to make a knee-jerk reaction on this, and so it's right that as a responsible regulator, we do take time to look at this properly and make the right decision. So we will be publishing a consultation in early December on that so we can work out what is the best approach and best interests of consumers. Whatever we decide will be the approach in the interest of consumers, as I say, but then WPD, if we go with the CC approach, will have the opportunity to accept an adjusted cost of equity position that only reflects the impact of the change in methodology. It will reflect nothing beyond that. So that's where we are in that consultation. If there's any questions on that, we can take you through that in a bit more detail in the Q&A. Then the outcome of that consultation will obviously affect the DNOs for the slow trap process as well. And to help DNOs in putting together their revised business plan, we've been clear in our decision today that we expect the DNOs to plan on the basis of our existing position on the equity market return, but to provide a sensitivity analysis on the basis that we do meet and move what we need to change. So the remaining slides then just set out some of the details of WPD's plan in particular. So if I then flick to slide 19 just to conclude, it summarises our timetable. So you can see that we're at the yellow arrow today with the publication of our initial assessment and fast-track proposal. In a couple of weeks' time, you will see a couple more things. One is that consultation on the equity risk market return, and the other thing is more detail on our cost analysis and our benchmarking. We will then look to make a final decision on the fast-track decision in February next year, which will include the decision on the approach to the equity market return. All the other companies resubmit their business plans on March the 14th, and then we move into draft determinations and final determinations for the other companies later in the year. So I'm going to end there. Just a quick run through. I hope it gives you a little bit more colour about the thinking behind our decision today, and I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. If any of the participants would like to ask a question, you may now press the star followed by the one on your telephone, and if you wish to cancel the request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. And the first question comes from Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just have a question on investor confidence. 5 years ago, you kicked off RPI minus X at 20 and did 3 years of work where you set, and the outcome of that was, one of the outcomes was to set a range for the ROE at 6 to 7.2. Now it appears that you're looking to bring that under review at a time when arguably investor confidence in the UK utility sector is at a low due to other areas of the value chain. How do you think this will impact investor confidence on the network side?
Okay, that's a good question. I mean, we're committed, as we said right up front, to maintaining a robust and stable regulatory framework that enables us to attract the investment that we need at a fair price to consumers. So that's a starting point. We do have an established methodology on the cost of equity, and that's what we've applied in assessing the business plans under RIIO-ED1. But this new information has been put into the public domain by the Competition Commission, and we have to take it seriously, and we want to make sure we have the time to consider it appropriately and make the right decision rather than taking a snap decision in the couple of days and the week that's been available to us.
So just if I could follow up on that, if you weren't to reduce the cost of equity from 6.7, do you think there's a risk that third parties would automatically ask for a CC referral, knowing that the CC are actually taking a different view? So do you think there's a risk that if you don't adjust the allowed ROE down, that automatically they are by third parties?
So our decisions are challengeable by the companies and by third parties, as you say. I mean, our focus is on looking at this carefully and making the right decision, and we'll do that over the next couple of months.
But having said that, the Competition Commission, you know, is clearly the appeal body relevant to these decisions, and we have to take any new information that it puts into the public domain very seriously.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from John Musk from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Two questions from me. Firstly, sort of following on the cost of equity side of things, just want to check the timetable there. You're saying that you'll have a decision on the methodology to approach in February, and I just wondered, you know, why you don't wait for that before getting the companies to put in their, you know, they don't have much time then to put that into their final business plans. It would seem sensible to wait until you have clarity on that and then allow the companies to put business plans in afterwards. And then secondly, the area of where the companies missed most, I guess, versus your expectations, as you highlighted, on the cost efficiency side of things. Is there any particular category of costs that you would highlight as where they are out of line?
Okay. Hi there. My name is Ian Rowson, Associate Partner, Regulatory Finance and Compliance at Ofgem. To pick up your question on the costs of equity, the timetable for the consultation paper, I think I recognise the point underlying your question. What we are needing to do is to ensure that we give stakeholders a reasonable chance to comment on the issues that have been highlighted by the publication of the Competition Commission paper. In terms of the timetable for the price review, and particularly the slow track process, we are asking companies to prepare their plans on the basis that we are not going to change our methodology. We are also asking them to highlight any aspects of their plans where they may need to change if we were to change that methodology. We are aiming to conclude by February. That is as far as the fast track process goes, is as far as we can go. We're not going to be able to extend the fast track process beyond that. However, it doesn't prevent us from considering remaining issues during the slow track process in terms of, for example, actual numbers, but we are focusing specifically on the methodology issues for this consultation.
And just picking up on your question about the benchmarking, I mean, we benchmark at a total expenditure level, taking into account a wide range of information. So today we're not highlighting particular areas that we're concerned about, but when you see the detail of that assessment, it'll be possible to pick through that and see some of the areas perhaps that stand out more.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Peter Bisiga from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Another question on this cost of equity issue. If your analysis finds that your previous methodology for the cost of equity was wrong and you should move to the Competition Commission approach, do you have any ability or for that matter desire to reopen the regulatory allowances for both National Grid and gas distribution, particularly if it would be clear that that would be in the interests of customers?
So So we don't intend to open the price controls already in place. So I think it's important from a regulatory certainty and commitment point of view that we don't undo deals that are already done.
Okay, that was very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Dominic Nash from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I think we're going to get a bit tired of questions on this RORE, but yet another one, I'm afraid. Obviously, all the companies passed the financial requirement, which I presume means that, given your point of view, are you actually saying that a 4 to 4.2%, depending on what debt tracker you use, plainly in a WACC, is acceptable for regulated utilities on an asset basis? And secondly, why are you looking at the RORE in isolation over asset when you look at the Northern Ireland CC, where their WACC on their asset is also 4.1%? So are you just going to be concentrating on the RORE in isolation with a debt tracker, or will you be looking at it on an asset basis?
Okay, Dean Rathen again. In terms of what we've signalled is acceptable, we didn't signal an unqualified acceptance of a 6.7%. Our acceptance of 6.7% in the context of the fast-track company is explicitly in context of the very tough benchmark, the very tough targets that they've set for themselves. We, in terms of our assessment of the cost of equity proposals, we identified a number of downside uncertainties in the numbers, downside in relation to the proposals that the companies were putting forward. And we've explained in the document, broadly speaking, how we've considered those. We actually use, and we identify this in the document, a cost of equity figure of 6.3%. as our reference point for that testing. It's too early to say what we would use in our slow track assessment. As regards the question of whether we consider the return on equity in isolation, we don't consider it in isolation so much. But in relation to the Competition Commission decision, as you point out, the Competition Commission assessment for Northern Ireland Electricity was a weighted average cost of capital of 4.1%, which is very close to what we have. However, the breakdown of that highlights a significantly higher cost of debt and a very significantly lower cost of equity. The explanations for the cost of debt, I think, are fairly clear, and it's in relation to the particular circumstances in Northern Ireland, and it would seem a stretch to translate that across to the conditions in Great Britain.
I don't actually agree with that, because if you buy an asset, you buy an asset risk and a beta associated with the asset. And if a company has a specific high cost of debt, that shouldn't really play into then their required equity, in that you should be doing it on a notional basis, shouldn't you?
Okay. Well, this may be something that we can consider in more depth in the consultation, but the issues around Northern Ireland, and in particular the question of Northern Ireland premium that was discussed in some detail in the Competition Commission report, probably do not relate to conventional beta assessment. It's more around questions around political and regulatory risk in Northern Ireland.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Lakis Athanasiou from Agency Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'll kick off one question, not on cost of equity, but then I'm afraid I have to go back to it. On the capitalization ratio, is that pretty much in line with the OPEX-CAPEX split, or were there any notable deviations? On the cost of equity, really following on from what Dominic was saying, your financeability metrics are quite close to the bone, particularly the adjusted interest cover ratio. Now, we've got, 2.7 in the debt indexation coming through this next year, likely to fall another 0.2 points in the subsequent year. You're really getting close on financeability. Is the truth is that you just cannot go to lower allowed returns? Now, you might flex your cost of equity, but you'll come out with something else that just gets your allowed return back up to to the levels you've got currently? Or is that not a way to look at the thing? And a last question, minor point, what proportion of index linked debt did you assume in your financeability metrics?
Sorry. Oh, right. Okay. On the capitalization ratios, we asked the companies to determine a capitalization ratio with reference to their the actual split between operating expenditure and investment expenditure, and we've not identified any notable deviations. The issues, of course, around capitalization ratios, they do impact on cash flows, they do impact on intergenerational equity and so on, but in broad terms, it's all present value neutral. In terms of the cost of equity, I acknowledge your point that the metrics do look very close to the bone. We are aware of that. I think our assessment is not quite as sort of mechanistic as you suggest it might be in terms of what is and what is not financeable. Clearly, if we were to make a change in our methodology following consultation, there would be some quite serious issues that we would have to address as to how to address those apparent issues on the metrics. At this stage, probably little point in going much further than that. In terms of index linked, that we have assumed for the purpose of financeability at 25% of debt is index linked.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Bobby Chada from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first is, when you are asking the non-fast track companies to submit a business plan, both with the existing cost of equity and then with an adjustment for the Competition Commission, do you expect the rest of the business plan, i.e. all the non-cost of equity pieces of it, to be identical, or are they allowed to be different business plans to take on board a kind of package effect? And then secondly, looking at the Competition Commission document, there's a very material difference in the risk-free rate that they've assumed and the risk-free rate that Ofgem has used in all of the recent price controls. In fact, that seems to be the vast majority of the difference that of the 0.8% that you're talking about. I mean, do you think it's even acceptable to change your risk-free rate by that amount in less than 12 months since three other price controls?
Yeah, if we pick up on the first question, we have asked the companies to resubmit on the basis we stick with our current methodology, provide that sensitivity, and we need to work through that, what that means, and the companies need to work through exactly what that means. But at first sight, I mean, if we were to move to a different approach, we'd be doing so because we think that's in the interest of consumers. So I would not expect that to have a big impact on a large proportion of the business plan, but that's not to say that there won't be some areas that will be affected.
Yes, on the risk-free rate, you're right. It is a very different risk-free rate figure. I think the main focus of the debate, however, is really around the total market return, the equity market return figure. The centre point figure is in the region of 6%, which is lower than we have conventionally, or indeed regulators generally have conventionally used. So whether the adjustment is applied to the risk-free rate or to the market risk premium is, in a way, a secondary question. Whether it's acceptable for us to change our view within 12 months is a matter of that we're clearly going to have to address in our consultation paper.
I just to be absolutely clear on this, I think you're raising some, in general, this question is raising some of the issues which show why we shouldn't be taking a knee-jerk reaction to this. But by the same token, neither should we ignore it. This is an important piece of additional information coming from the appeal body for this decision, so neither should we ignore it. And, that is why we're taking the approach that we're taking, to flush out all of these issues, to discuss them, and to come to the right decision at the end of the process.
But isn't it, is it not slightly inconsistent to say, for this price control we can adopt, we will consider to move to a much lower cost of equity, which is really down to the time frame that the Competition Commission uses for its analysis and kind of not averaging up for the pre-crisis period, but then to say we don't intend to reopen any price controls where we explicitly took a different perspective?
We are being very transparent. We're consulting on these proposals. We are considering how to take on board additional information that's come into the public domain after the submission of business plans. You know, I think that's entirely consistent with a stable, independent regulatory approach. And I think regulatory consistency does not mean that nothing ever changes during the regulatory process. It's just we do that in a transparent, consultative way that has regard to the importance of stability in providing investor confidence.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Martin Brough from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello. I'm afraid it's another question on the methodology around the six and the return on equity. Just to understand what you've done mechanically, so have you taken the Competition Commission methodology and then just changed to 65% gearing? And in particular, in doing that, have you capped the 0.1 debt beta? Because it seems to me that if you use a 0.1 debt beta, yes, you can get an average of about 6% for the cost of equity when you increase the gearing. But on the other hand, is it really credible to argue a 0.1 debt beta when your index-linked cost of debt methodology implies a total debt premium of less than 1%? And if you keep a 0.1 debt beta and you're assuming less than a 1% total debt premium, you're assuming more than half of the total debt premium is beta risk, which just seems a bit implausible. And if you assume a debt beta of zero and do the same Competition Commission methodology, you get an average of 6.8% for the cost of equity. So I just wanted to check exactly what you've done mechanically to translate the Competition Commission lower gearing assumption to the 6%.
Okay. Just to make it clear what we have done mechanically, we've effectively translated the both the Competition Commission and the position that have been set out by the DNOs in the context of a 0.1 debt beta and worked out what that implies for asset betas given the DNO proposals for cost of equity. I accept your query around is it plausible that half of the the spreads on network bonds could be beta? That is a question that may be pertinent to our assessment. However, I'm not sure I recognise how we can reduce our total market return by effectively something in the region by about 0.8 and reach a cost of equity of 6.8 unless we ignore the risk differences between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. We have, to be clear, we have assumed the beta figures that we have in GB, recognising that the Competition Commission's own beta assessments were based on GB betas, but moved up a little bit for a regulatory environment in Northern Ireland, which is less well understood by investors. And we've also taken into account the cost of debt index that we have in the RIIO cost of debt index. So I think we certainly wouldn't be looking at 6.8 by translating the Competition Commission position to the DNOs.
Okay, but just mechanically, going from a debt beta of 0.1 to a debt beta of 0, I think adds 90 basis points to the implied cost of equity. So doesn't all of this just hinge on deciding to start using a debt beta?
Well, yeah, I think that has to be assuming a fixed overall assessment of the asset beta. I think if we were to translate the equity, the cost of equity figures that we have, how we interpret that and how we translate that back into an asset beta depends on, in the first place, the assumption for the debt beta. So if you change the assumption for the debt beta, you would get a different asset beta, and then you'd largely come back to the same sort of endpoint either way.
Okay. Well, look forward to seeing the methodology.
I shall make sure now that we set that out very clearly.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. If anybody else would like to ask a question, you may now press the star followed by the one on your telephone, and if you wish to cancel the request, please press the star followed by the two. The next question currently comes from Ian Turner from Exane. Please go ahead.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I was going to ask a question radically not about the equity risk premium and the risk-free rate, if I may, although I would just add my comment to say that I think the ones that the Competition Commission are proposing are clearly completely wrong. But having said that, if we just move to your slide for the return on regulatory equity for the companies that you're giving fast-track status to, could you just go through what they actually have to achieve to hit the top of those ranges, please, on the incentive mechanisms?
Yes, certainly. This is Anna Rossington here. So I've been leading all the policy sides and the general coordination. Basically, what this sets out is the different incentive elements that are available under the price control package. And these were broadly set out in our strategy decision, which we published earlier this year. So if you work up, I'm actually working up from the bottom of the legend, but most of the elements are actually sort of almost symmetrical around the central point. So the central point is the baseline RORE, which runs along at just above, well, between sort of, you know, just above sort of 7%. And then on top of that, you have the IQI additional income, which, as we set out in the strategy decision, is an element of revenue which is available to a fast-track company. This is actually in lieu of the revenues that it might receive when we do the IQI application at slow track. And on top of that, then, is an estimation of the income that it might be able to receive under the TOTEX incentive if it should manage efficiencies over the course of RIIO ED1 in its total expenditures. The orange band is then potential innovation funding that it can receive for small-scale innovation projects. Blue line is then the discretionary reward for losses. Again, if they manage to achieve particularly innovative losses initiatives over the price control. The light green band is then the broad measure of customer satisfaction. So this is a measure that we introduced in the middle of the last price control, and that looks at a number of elements of customer satisfaction, including surveys and complaints, and actually then gives them rewards and penalties on how they fare over that. The interruptions incentive scheme is a long-running incentive based on the reliability of their networks, and guaranteed standards above that is that the amounts that they actually have to pay out under legislation for things such as if a customer has actually been off power for a certain period of time. The health index above that is a potential sort of penalty over the price control or reward over the period of the price control against how they actually deliver on the secondary deliverable, which is the health of their networks. That's effectively an indicator of potential reliability in the future, and they have to set out as part of their package what they aim to achieve over the course of the price control. The connections incentive is then a new measure that we are introducing, which is a measure of average connection time for smaller customers, in terms of how long it actually takes to connect them, and also an engagement incentive for larger customers to check that they're delivering what larger customers want. The tax trigger is then a factor. I'm looking to Ian for this, but is potentially adjustments for tax over the period.
Changes in tax
regime. Yep. And then cost of debt was just applied to DPCR5, so it isn't actually shown in this diagram, because over DPCR5, before we adopted the new RIIO approach to index debt, they potentially could make money out of that.
So what this basically saying is that if we fast-track WPD on the basis of their plans that they've submitted to us, their starting point will be the top of the dark blue band, because they'll get their cost of equity 6.7 plus the 2.5% TOTEX in lieu of the IQI, then if they deliver exactly what they said, no better, no worse, that's where they'll stay. But if they start delivering either greater cost efficiencies or better outputs, they'll go up beyond that, or reverse if they underdeliver. What we set out here is a plausible range. It's not the absolute min or max, but it's a sort of plausible minimum and maximum range for return on equity.
And there's nothing in here for outperformance on debt. If the debt comes in lower than the tracker, that will be additional to this. Is that right?
Yeah.
Effectively, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse has joined us again for another question. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, just more question to Andrew. How do these business plans tie into the question of affordability? I think there was a debate in the press recently about the impact of distribution and transmission charges on customer bills. Can you give us some colour there as to how these are, these business plans and these proposals for WPD are going to drive bills? Thank you.
Well, I mean, clearly there's some good news for customers in this announcement today. I think the WPD business plans, as they stand, represent something like an £11 per customer reduction in distribution charges, which we would expect to see reflected in bills in the WPD area. If you look across the business plans submitted, then I think out of 13 out of the 14 deliver significant reductions in distribution charges. And, that's reflecting a number of things, including, the improved efficiency of these companies, the longer asset lives assumed, and a number of other factors. But generally, that's, I think, some welcome relief for consumers. And, I know that in general, all aspects of the value chain are under scrutiny at the moment with the current debate. I think our track record on the regulation that they're bearing down on the costs arising from network charges is very good. Since privatization, we've seen network charges almost halve over that period in real terms. With significant improvements in the quality of service. So we've seen a 25% reduction in outages, for example. So I think all of that is reflective of the incentive-based regulation that we've implied consistently over the 20 years or so, 20 years plus, of incentive-based regulation. So I think there's a very good track record there that I think we'd be quite happy to defend. And clearly a key part of the success of this regime is the stability of the regime, is that when people outperform, they trust that they get to keep the benefit of that. And clearly we want to resist anything that undermines that trust, including, for example, reopening price controls, as was mentioned before, which is one of the reasons why Hannah was adamant that our reconsideration of the cost of equity will not lead to a revisiting of previous price controls agreed.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Very clear.
Thank you. Also joining us again for a question is Lucas Athanasiou from Agency Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi there, me again, and sorry to take you back to the cost of equity thing. One of the ways of squaring the circle on financeability with a lower equity is to move to CPI indexation instead of RPI. I mean, you could really push down the cost of equity that way and still be financeable. Is there any consideration there of doing it in this in ED1 at all, or is that completely off the cards?
Well, it's nothing's ever completely off the cards, but it's not. And there are a number of reasons why we've always identified RPI as an appropriate basis for indexation, and principally because government gilts and other index-linked bonds are indexed with reference to RPI. Were they to move to CPI, there may be a stronger case for indexing with reference to CPI. Clearly, we are going to we may have to consider a number of innovative approaches to try and assist with the financeability issue if we are to change our methodology for assessing equity market return. So, from that perspective, nothing's off the table, but it's not something that we've identified as a primary candidate at any rate at this stage.
Could I ask one other question, just following up, not that specifically, but, I mean, is it possible that the Competition Commission just really sold specifically for Northern Ireland with really no consideration of wider implications, and that if it were to review a GB RAB company, it may come out to different conclusions on equity, or is that not something that really we can debate?
Yeah, the problem is, there are certainly some specific Northern Ireland aspects to their decision overall, but we've identified those in particular around the cost of equity as the beta issues around Northern Ireland electricity and the questions of the cost of debt and also gearing, obviously. The problem we have is that the particular issues that we've highlighted are generic issues. They relate to market returns overall and the position of the Competition Commission that they set for Northern Ireland electricity would, by default, translate to other companies in Great Britain too. So that's our sort of interpretation of it.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've got probably time for one question or maybe two if they're quick and short.
Thanks.
So go ahead.
Thank you. The next question comes from Scott Phillips from Moody's Investment Service. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Just a quick question on your financeability assessment. You've previously talked about net debt to RAV and the PMITR, or adjusted interest cover ratio, as being the two most important you look at. Given that you're now looking at a wider range of ratios, would you potentially tolerate a weaker PMICR and still say you have provided financeability? And then secondly, if you could just confirm that the ratios you've shown for WPD include the fast track bonus.
Okay. Yes, we well, first of all, to answer your second question, yes, the ratios that we refer to for WPD do include the fast track bonus. In terms of whether we would say, well, we've got a weaker PMICR and it's still financeable, it would seem quite an unduly cavalier approach. We're not planning to assess the issue quite that simply. We are simply going to have to address quite a wide range of issues if we are to change our methodology.
Okay, thanks.
It's time for one more question.
Thank you. The very last question then coming from Martin Brough from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, yeah. It was just a broader question about RIIO in the context of this review and the relationship between investment and profit, which I guess customers are particularly concerned about. And it's hard to get the relationship between outputs and revenue drivers correct. And isn't it really the case that the RIIO just increases the incentives to pitch for a load of CapEx and then not spend it? And it actually reduces the returns on the wires that you do build. And relating to that, if there is an appeal to the Competition Commission, you know, they've never signed off on the RIIO process. If they say this is just a bad way of setting a price control, would you just go back to the traditional RPI minus X? Because I don't really see the Competition Commission using a RIIO approach on Northern Ireland.
Okay, I'm not sure completely picking up the point that you make on the CAPEX. I might need to pick up that separately. I'm not quite sure we see how that follows. I mean, on the wider point of the Competition Commission, I mean, the RIIO process hasn't been referred to the Competition Commission, but they have looked at the approach and they hopefully do understand it. I mean, I think if any of these price controls are referred, it's probably going to be a decision that's more nuanced than that. There are a number of aspects of RIIO, some of which have been adopted by the regulators, others that haven't so far. And so I think we'll just see what happens. But I'd have thought that any decision from the CC would like to be more nuanced than that. And also, if you look through some of the Competition Commission's documents, particularly on the NIE determination recently, actually there are a number of positive pointers in relation to the RIIO framework too.
Okay.
Right, well, thank you very much. I think that's we call it a day there, and thank you very much for calling in. If you have any remaining queries, then please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. I think you can contact Alex Lyon or Harry Barton in the Investor Relations team here, and I'm sure they'd be happy to channel any queries through to us. So thank you very much, and have a good day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the conference call for today. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.